All right. Well, the point of this seminar is missions trips that leave a lasting impact. And as I've thought about that question, that statement that was given to me for the last couple of months, I've thought a lot about the type of impact we have in missions trips, short-term missions trips in particular. And the thing that keeps coming to mind is you're going to have an impact. It's just a matter of whether it's good or bad. You're going to leave a stamp on somebody's life and impress them in one way or another. Over and over, missionaries endure pathetic, whiny, selfish people who they hope to never see again on their mission field. And at the same time, I hear missionaries over and over again celebrating the selfless, evangelistically focused, humble, godly people who they can't wait to get back. In one way or another, you're going to leave an impact. The question is, what impact is it? And maybe a starting point to look at that is examining the impact you have right here, right now. Because life is a short-term missions trip. When you think about it, life itself, what you're doing on this planet between salvation and death, is a short-term missions trip. And so it's only a matter of how well you're using what God's already given you. I'll reference a few verses, and I'll put them up on the screen here, so just for sake of time, we can get to those quickly. One that I'm not going to put up just to mention in your hearing is 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 20, where Paul writes, "Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making an appeal through us. We beg you, on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God." And Paul is saying he's an ambassador. He's one who speaks with the authority of the one who sent him. He speaks with the message of the one who sent him. He doesn't have his own message. He speaks with the message of God who has commissioned him and called him into gospel ministry. And so as Paul would view himself as an ambassador in chains, as he will say elsewhere, we have a question to consider is, what impact is your life having right now? What's the impact of your short-term mission trip that you're already on? What influence are you? Perhaps you came to this conference with somebody, a friend, a family member, somebody you trust. Ask them. Ask them, what's your influence? Are you marked by patterns of sin or by the fruit of the Spirit? Are you marked by patterns of selfishness and gossip and slander and laziness? Or are you marked by patterns of selflessness, humility, joy, contentment? The Beatitudes. Is your example right now an impediment or an accelerant to the gospel? That's where you have to start, because all you're going to do on a short-term missions team is bring out the best or the worst of us. You know how it is. When you're under intense circumstances, it presses down your character and then reveals whatever is best about us or whatever is worst about us. That's what happens on a short-term missions team. And so what we're looking for now is the preparation needs to be in place so that when you do go, or when you do get to go again, what comes out of you is the trained character that demonstrates godliness at its core. How many of you have been on short-term missions teams at least once? All right, put those down. Multiple times. Okay, all right, good deal. How many of you have never been on one, just for contrast? All right, good deal. You're living one right now, so you have been on one, okay? Your life, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, life is your first short-term missions team. Now you're just talking about where else you go, location. Live distinctly as salt and light. It's a dark and decaying world, and so every single day we live that way. Ellen was a gal we knew. She was a single gal, had a heart for Mexico City, and God gave her the opportunity to go there, and she's been there now for 40 years. And not too long ago, she was speaking to a college group of about 800 kids, and she was explaining about this ministry, and there was a request from the pastor to say, can we go? Is there an opportunity that we can go and help? Her answer was amazing. Her answer said, yes, but I can't guarantee your safety. It was interesting because all of a sudden the roster for those who are interested just starts to go down. Because when she said, I've survived there for 40 years, but I can't guarantee that you're going to come back. I can't guarantee your safety. I can't guarantee that you're going to be able to go there, have an effective season in ministry, and return in a healthy, wholesome condition. It's going to cost you something. A whole different mindset. Josh was a buddy of mine in college. I went to Master's College out in California. He went on a missions trip to India, never came back. He decided to stay, canceled his return ticket, and stayed. Didn't come back for a couple of years and only came back long enough to liquidate what he left behind and go right back. And he's still there. You talk about a short-term missions team that kind of had a different back door on it. He wasn't quite certain that he never had that in mind when he went. Daniel, another kid I knew who was going to go on a missions team, who's going to Albania, came up a couple hundred dollars short on how to raise funds for his team. I've never heard anyone else do this. This kid walks this campus today. He's actually here at Southern. He went out and he was $200 short. He had to get the money by the weekend in order to be able to go. He did something I would never recommend anyone to do, but he entered a prize fight and won to get the money. This kid was dead serious about being on this missions trip, and the only way he knew he could get $300 in time was to go fight for it. And he did. He came into my office bruised, beaten. I said, "What on earth did you do?" And he put the money out. He says, "I got the money." Okay. That was serious. I wouldn't recommend doing it. I would never encourage anyone to do it. But Daniel did it. My point in those illustrations is that God calls you into missions. It's a lifetime of missions, as you've heard. It's a lifetime of evangelism. It's only a matter of location. If you have the opportunity in God's providence to go and participate in a short-term missions team, there's some things we need to put in mind. And the place we draw those elements from are from the individuals who started short-term missions. You look at Jesus Christ and what he did on earth. You look at the disciples when he sent them out to test out their faith and test out their willingness. You look at Peter, you look at Paul, and all these different individuals from Scripture who just obediently, lovingly put Christ on display in a different location for a period of time. Short-term missions are not a drive-by ministry where you just blast through and do something and leave and with feeling no implications or consequences for the things you've done. They're not meant to be filled with just warm bodies who are willing to go, even unbelievers who just want an experience. Short-term missions are not a vacation. We don't send people to a tourist spot for the sake of the same reason you would go on vacation. A short-term ministry is a gospel-proclaiming, missionary-encouraging, believer-equipping, and need-exposing trip. I'll say that a couple of times. A short-term ministry team is a gospel-proclaiming, missionary-encouraging, believer-equipping, and need-exposing opportunity. It's an opportunity to proclaim the gospel, to put Christ on display, whether that's in helping plant a church or strengthen a church or sharpen leadership in some way or fill in a component of a church ministry for a period of time. It's to bring encouragement to missionaries, to affirm them, to bring fellowship to them. Are any of you missionary kids or have served as a full-time missionary in a place for a period of time? Okay, you've had some experience with that. If you have, you understand loneliness. You can understand what it's like to be alone. I mean, you don't have to be a missionary to understand loneliness. You can do that in a crowd. But to be in a place where you don't have believers fellowship around you, people who love Christ as much or more than you do, who come alongside to bring that encouragement to you, that's a dynamic of a team. It's also there to equip believers, to help you understand the gospel ministry and also bring equipping to others. And then to expose needs, to help you gain a broader view of God's work, what he's doing in different places, both in terms of the breadth of it as well as the depth of it. And so when you're looking at what a short-term ministry team is, it's to proclaim the gospel, encourage missionaries, equip believers, and expose needs. And those are the sorts of things that take place. You gauge the impact by the clarity of the message given, by the amount of fellowship that was communicated, by the needs that were exposed, by the kind of equipping that was done. Those are some of the things that we have in mind when we look at a short-term missions team. But let's step back. Let's talk about what really makes a lasting impact in a positive way. What would make all of us, individuals that a missionary in a foreign field would say, yes, I want them to return. I want that group to bring everybody they know who's like-minded and come with them. What are some things that we can have in mind? Well, let me give you five dynamics of that will have a healthy gospel impact. Five dynamics that will have a healthy gospel impact. First is holy humility. And this isn't new to you, but holy humility. Philippians 2, verse 3 to 8, behind me here. You can read some of it. The rest of it I'm blocking, but that's okay. It says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own interests, your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourself which is in Christ Jesus, who although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, being made in the likeness of men, being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross." In this passage, we can we can and should spend so much time going through it to understand all the dynamics that Paul is putting on display here. But just in brief, to draw out the point of humility, of a brokenness which understands who we are in relationship to Christ and in relationship to other people. The illustration that Paul gives here is of Jesus Christ when he says, don't look out for your own interests, but look out for the interests of others. That our thoughts of those we're serving are so far ahead of who we are. So what I want to do is I put the passage in your mind, write it down, you study it. Let me give you some principles to kind of list underneath the passage about what humility would look like in this context, okay? I mean this to be as practical, as helpful as possible, and then at the end we'll have plenty of time for any questions or thoughts you might want to add to this, okay? So a couple things to lock in mind. One, if we're going to be humble and holy in this pursuit, we're going to recognize that I'm not a missions expert. Just because you get on a short-term missions team, you're not a missions expert. Over and over again, you talk to missionaries, so many of them get so discouraged when somebody comes on the field, you're there for 2 weeks, and all of a sudden you have all the ideas for how to do their job better than they ever could, and you feel the liberty to share those things. That's not our place, right? I mean, you get in an environment like that, by God's grace, you've been able to go there. We're there to serve a missionary, not to criticize them and their work. If you think there's a serious issue, tell the team leader, catalog it, bring it back, and talk about it at an appropriate time. But your goal is to serve the mission that they are accomplishing there and participate with them, not to be an instant expert in their place. I remember one time as a caring for a team that we had in a foreign country, I get a phone call at 2 in the morning our time. It was high noon their time. And there was a massive crisis going on because they disagreed with something that was taking place on the field. This team was struggling to fulfill its objective because they were getting knotted up over how something was being done there, rather than just simply yielding and saying, they're the missionaries, they live here. Our goal is not to destroy their mission field. We're here to help them. And so they have to take a step back and recognize we're not the experts, they are. Humbly recognize that our mission is not to promote American culture. Our goal is not to export our culture. Our goal is to take them the gospel and leave everything else back home. That's important because there's often times in those contexts where people have questions. I remember being in Ukraine and in Russia, we would be teaching on different things, and then all of a sudden there'd be questions about, you know, at that point I was living in Southern California. So what's Hollywood like? And who's this person like? And do you ever see any movie stars? And, you know, all the different dynamics of what culture is like here. And you can answer those questions if you're asked your opinion on that stuff. But there's a context for it, and it's not to be intermingled with the teaching of the Word. And so those are the kind of things where you'd say, hey, that's a great question. Let's talk about that at this point in time. I'll show you some pictures. I'll tell you about it. But that's not the purpose we're here. You don't use your culture as a platform to proclaim the gospel. We're there to proclaim the gospel. Humbly recognize that we're in great need of learning what God has in store for us on this trip. Meaning that as we look at the opportunity you have in front of you, God has given you that as a privileged position. There are things that he has in store for you to learn that you cannot put in a textbook ahead of time to be taught. So you've got to humbly embrace whatever he has in store for you. That means an attitude that refuses to complain. Refuse to complain. One of the worst things you can do on a short-term missions team is become the complainer. If you do that and we're a part of it, we have a ticket home for you now. Because that's toxic, right? All it takes to split a church is one person with a bad attitude who attaches it to a person in leadership. And you've got a split that's happening. Same thing in a family, same thing in a missions team, same thing across the Christian kingdom. You get a bad attitude, you're not willing to deal with that immediately, you attach it to somebody else in the team, you've just split that team and paralyzed it. And so if you're going to complain and you can't repent of that quickly, you get an early flight home. So deal with it now. Here's something else to keep in mind in this whole vein of thought on humility. Is humbly recognize that a short-term missions team is not the time for romance. It's not the time to be scoping out somebody else on the team that you think might be a lifelong partner. That's not the time for it. You can make observations because we do that. I met my wife in the context of ministry. I prayed that I would meet my wife in the context of serving alongside each other so I knew we could do it for life because our dating, the whole thing was done in the context of ministry. Well, that's fine. You pray for that. You can make observations. But don't you dare make a move, because that's also an early ticket home. That's not the point of it. And you also show whoever that spouse is that you don't have a clear focus on why you're there. And that's going to put a big check in their mind over your character, that you don't have the self-control to be focused when you need to be. Think about that. Humbly accept changes. We call it Team Gumby. Remember Gumby? Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about. At least Somebody help me. Remember Gumby? He was that like plastic thing. You stretch him out 4 feet long, right? Yeah, we're Team Gumby. That means that if you got to sleep in an airport, you're going to sleep in an airport. You got to take a flight that's going to go the wrong way. And I mean, just like things happen. Missions trips are like, I'm just convinced that there's some kind of satanic force that just hates missions trips. And whatever it is, there is something that you have to contend with, whether it's in your own attitude or logistics, food. We had one opportunity to be in Russia. It was a great time. The whole trip was going wonderful until you have to use a restroom and realize that there's absolutely nothing in that whole setting that looked like anything you ever recognized ever. It was just a 1800s outhouse. Deal with it. You know, then you go have dinner and you open up the two pieces of bread and there's a fish head. Not the body, just the head between two pieces of bread. That's your peanut butter and jelly. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like you find yourself in a situation where somebody worked hard and they're watching your face to see if you flinch or if you wince when you discover what they just served you. And your attitude is going to determine a lot of their attitude towards you. And you're there to represent Christ. So what are you going to do? Now you think about that. You think about the flexibility you have to have. Think about the attitude we have towards unexpected challenges, things that challenge our living conditions. We're so quick to assume that our comforts are critical. They're not. So humbly accept the challenges that God brings. Recognize that, Lord willing, you will survive. And if you don't, that was in plan. That was planned anyway. So it'll make a good story for somebody else. You never cease to be an evangelist, even for a single moment. You have to remember that the missions trip starts long before you ever take off. It starts with the people you're going with. It starts with the people you meet along the way. It continues all the way till you're back and just blends right back into life. A humble, holy, dependent heart is what we need. And as Paul points out, Philippians 2, a heart that is what Christ had, where though he existed in the form of God, did not regard that as a thing to be held onto, but he divested himself. He gave himself to others. Holy humility. Second, serve constantly. Serve constantly. Nothing brings out selfishness like a missions trip. Nothing. It just extracts selfishness. It's like the boiler and all the water goes away and you're left with just a puddle of selfishness. Because all those creature comforts, everything you have from your space, some of us really like space. We like distance. I know even in a room like this, some of you are cringing. Like, I'm just not used. I mean, I love you. You're nice people. We'll go to heaven together, but I don't want to sit next to you. You know, like, that's just difficult for us sometimes because how we live. Nothing brings it out like an opportunity to serve Christ. But when you have an opportunity to serve constantly, to love others, John 13:5 says, the example of Christ, when he poured the water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And then verse 13 says, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you should also do as I did to you. This is the heartbeat of serving one another from beginning to end. We live in a world which has kind of a fair trade on serving, where I'll serve as long as I know there's anticipation of being served. I'll serve as long as I know there's potential that I won't have to do this at some point. We don't often have the mindset that says I have to serve relentlessly, unendingly, until I die. And when I'm exhausted from serving, then guess what? I get to serve even more. We don't have a mindset all the time that just views itself as I'm here to humbly serve. I'll give you some categories to think in. You're there to serve the people to whom you're ministering, the people who are there. Remember that it's our job to serve those in the country to where we're going. There's a tendency for us to go into another area and accept the things that they want to do for us. I mean, sometimes those folks know, hey, we're coming to help them, and so they want to do something for us. And there's a tendency to allow them to outserve us when our goal is to be there to serve them. We don't just lay back and soak up what they would offer. We think of ways to serve every individual person, especially those who are hosting us. I remember one group we were working with, a group of Koreans, and they would speak in Korean the entire time. But about halfway through, we figured out that they all knew and understand English perfectly, but they would never speak it around us. And one of the reasons was to see how we would respond to them. They knew everything we said. Every little tiny statement we made, they knew it all. And they were just watching, just learning. because they knew that eventually we would start to complain or whine or say something, you know, about one of them. You want to talk about a way to destroy the mission field? Let that selfishness in your heart go unchecked and let it get verbalized. Don't forget, they more often than not know exactly what's going on. They're humans too. So we're there to serve them. Serve the ones we're ministering to. Serve the missionaries. Serve the people that you go there to be with. Have a mindset that when you're going to serve them, that these are people who love Christ, who have given up so much to go and live in another place. What kind of a gift can we bring them? What kind of a way can we serve them? I mean simple things, like going there and doing all the chores that you never did around your own house that your parents would love to have you do, but you get to go do it there because you just see the need and you meet it. Find ways to babysit for them, to send them out for dinner. Like, let them have 5 date nights in a row because you're there to actually serve them in a meaningful way. Build a relationship so that this thing extends beyond the short-term missions team. Remember, one of the points of going is to build a relationship that you'll have in place for life. I've got lifelong friends all over the world because I've been able to see them in their context, see what they're doing, engage them, and continue that going. And in a world that we live in now that's constantly synchronized, I'll get a text from China, then one from the Netherlands, one from Australia, and then you FaceTime with some guy while you're driving, you know, and he's in you know, some other part of the world. Like, we live in a world where it's absurd the way we can communicate instantly. So you build a relationship that's going to be sustainable by investing themselves in your life, in their life. We were in northern Russia, and we were coming back to this missionary's house, and we recognized that the muffler was kind of falling off his car, and we knew that, like, it's really inconvenient time for that, but we got to get it fixed. And I said, how can we help you? And he says, well, we got to get to the shop. So we got 2 cars and one driver. And he looks at me and says, well, you drive. I said, it's Russia. I can't. I don't have a Russian driver's license. He looks at me and says, yeah, it's Russia. Let's drive. So he's like, follow me. So I've got this car. It's like a Jeep kind of thing, manual transmission. I mean, we are ripping through the streets, and this guy's like having fun that I can't keep up with him, and he's just tearing off. We finally get to like what looked to me like a public storage, you know, kind of deal, but it was actually a garage. You know, that's where a guy has a mechanic shop, and rolled up the door, and the car goes, and it's done. But it was one of those moments where we realized, you know what, being here to serve these people means serve them in ways that sometimes we need to serve each other just in the family of Christ right here at home. Help the guy get the car to the garage. Help him pay for it. Help him get it back so he can be effective. Like, we want to leave missionaries in better condition than we found them. And so when we go there, we want to do more than we say. We want to make sure we accomplish more than they ever thought we could, because we take all of our skills and gifting, put it into practice there, alleviate their pressure for a short period of time, and leave them in better condition. Could you imagine what it's like if a group from France called you up and said, hey, can I come to your city? Can you set up a time where you can show us around for a couple of days and then give us a place to sleep for free and some food to eat for free and then keep us busy all day every day for 2 weeks? You know how exhausting that is? It could be a mess. So when we think about how we're going and what we're going to do, we've got to think carefully about actually serving the people we're going to help. Develop the relationship with them. So serving the ones we're ministering to, the target, serving the missionary, and then serving our fellow team members. Looking for those in our team who need help. That's the eye where everyone's your brother's keeper. You're looking for the needs of the people you're with. You're looking for those who are struggling. I always think of 1 Thessalonians 5:14, one of my favorite verses when it ever comes to relationships. It's where Paul says to admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak. And Dave, you remember what the last phrase is? It says, be patient with all, right? Because when I've admonished you, I've helped you, I've encouraged you, and none of that's working, I still got to be patient with you. Because I need you to be that patient with me when you are admonishing, encouraging, and helping me. And so when you look at that team, you got to do this just in relationships in general. You look at your circle of friends, you look at the people that you interact with, and you say, which one of these people needs to be admonished, and who can admonish, who needs to be encouraged, and who can encourage, and who needs to be helped, and who can help, who's faint-hearted, who's weak. You think through those categories, and that's the way you process the team around you, is what step are we in? Who are we able to encourage or minister to here? You're constantly serving. Give more than you take. Always give more than you take. Third, love sacrificially. So, holy humility, serve constantly. Third, love sacrificially. Still in John chapter 13. John 13, verse 34. Christ says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." This is an amazing verse, because it gives us a key to evangelism, which isn't so apparent all the time. It says there that, "By this will all men know you're my disciples, if you have love for one another." One of the strongest evangelistic forces we have is just loving other believers. You think about this in the context of a home. I don't know if all of you had opportunity to have been raised in a home where you have godly parents. When a mom and a dad who love Christ express that love for one another in the context of unbelieving children, they demonstrate the gospel. When they have forgiveness going back and forth, when they have confession of sin, when they have recognition of their weaknesses and the need to strengthen each other and shore up those weaknesses, when that's the kind of tone that goes back and forth in a marriage or in a church context, in a small group context, that is a tremendous gospel witness, because unbelievers see that and they see the love of Christ on display in vivid color. Well, same thing happens in a team. You love your teammates by not seeking out the best tasks possible for you to do. Go find the worst job to do and do that first. Find the job that nobody wants to do and keep looking for that job. Whatever the most disgusting, neglected, difficult task is, do that job. Why? Because it's a way of serving the others around you. It's a way of constantly being mindful of loving them in a way that Christ would love us. Don't seek out the popular jobs. Show love for other team members by being the one to do the less desirable tasks. Love the team leaders by willing to obey. If you're under a team leader, even if you think the individual is the most incompetent individual who's ever led a team on the face of the earth, be part of the solution, not part of the problem. They've been given a big responsibility, most of which is shepherding you on the team. And so make that easy for them. Help them with it. Find ways to solve things. If you ever spot a problem, bring at least two solutions, a good one and a bad one. And so that way you can help steer them towards it. That's the way you work with somebody you really have struggles with, who's over you, is you don't bring problems, you bring potential solutions, and then help them sort through those potential solutions. And that way you're kind of leading, what we call leading from the second chair. It's the way you lead when you don't have the reins, is you give them potential solutions and help them work towards it. Don't complain. Be flexible. Be mature on that. Love missionaries by doing what they ask. Show missionaries that you'll do anything for them. What do they need? Along with that goes the thought of contentment. Being content. Content where you sleep. I remember one day we were sleeping. We were going staying with people in their homes. Typical deal where you go, you serve in an environment, and then you go stay with host homes. And a buddy and I, we got this guy said he'd give us a place to sleep. So we're like, okay, let's go. And we jump in his truck, which means you're sitting on top of piles of stuff. That kind of gives you a kind of a thought for what we were going through. This was pre-Hoarders, before that show ever hit the air. We get there and we realize this is a trailer with holes in the floor. So like if you rolled over, you could literally put your hand down through the floor of the trailer. But this was it was his starting point. And out of the love of his heart, he wanted to serve us and give us a place to sleep for a couple nights. And so guess what? Here we go. And I'm still here and I love Jesus and I'm fine. You know, you do it. Because that's where you start. But it doesn't mean you have to leave it in the condition you found it. You can take part of your missions time to make that a better environment for that guy and bring him along in the process. But you just embrace it. You deal with things that run around the middle of the night and maybe cross you a time or two, and just part of the drill. It's character building. It's good. So you love sacrificially. Love the Lord by serving for His glory, not our own. You can best live out the love of Christ by doing things for the glory of Christ, not myself. Not myself. If you get on a missions team and you pick a fight with somebody else and you don't have the godliness and humility to resolve it right then and there, you're going to blow up the team and you'll blow up the mission field. You end up doing more harm than good. What this challenge here is to love sacrificially, to let love cover a multitude of sins, to deal with things head on, but be quick to forgive, very slow to anger, as Scripture says, carefully loving others sacrificially. Next, focus intently. Focus intently. So far, holy humility, serve constantly, love sacrificially. Fourth, focus intently. Stay focused. Take every opportunity to proclaim Christ. I mean every opportunity. This should be the hallmark of our lives now. That's why I said at the beginning, to go on a short-term missions team should just simply be an extension of what you're already doing. It should never be something different. If you find yourself clicking into a mode of, now we're going to evangelize, you've already lost. the way to train for short-term missions teams and be ready at any point in time is to be doing it constantly. See every single opportunity that you have that God's given you as a potential to proclaim Christ. And this challenges just the way we drive, the way you think, the way you interact, who you talk to, how you talk to them, the reason for which you build relationships with people. Every single one of those opportunities is a chance for you to proclaim Christ and build someone's knowledge, just even incrementally, of the gospel. Whether it's in an ESL program, teaching English as a second language, doing a vacation Bible school for kids, a service project, taking part in some more formal training setting, whether it's an outreach deal, opportunities to share Christ on airplanes, on airports, restaurants. I mean, you're contacting a cross-section of humanity that you'll never probably interact with again. So how are you going to prepare for that? You know, one of the questions is, what are you taking with you that you're going to give away? What stack of material do you have with you so you give somebody a next step? What stack of information? How do you connect them to the person in the country to follow up with? It's one thing if you just go and talk to people. It's another thing if you say, here, if you want to talk more, here's what you do. One time we were serving with a group of paramedics, and these individuals in emergency medicine, and trying to think of different ways to build relationships with them. And I went to one of them. I said, hey, you know what? You and I do, we've got one thing in common. He says, what's that? I said, we both get to see people on their worst possible day. On the worst moment of their life, we both get to see them. He says, well, what do? I said, I'm a pastor. I said, you get them when they hit the tree and their car's in pieces, their body is brutally bloodied, their life is a mess. I get to see them when their life falls apart and they come into my office and their heart is brutal and bloodied and messed up. I said, so we both get to see these people on their worst possible day. I want to talk to you on your worst day. When you're ready to talk, let's talk. And made myself available to him. You find ways to connect. How are you going to meet people, and how are you going to constantly put the gospel in every single opportunity so people know that you live your life to proclaim Christ? It doesn't matter if you're here in Louisville, it doesn't matter if you're somewhere else or going to a foreign country. We always were challenged to be ready to preach, pray, or die at any moment. Ever been challenged with that? If you're ever went through seminary in any way, usually that was one of the first challenges. Be ready to preach, pray, or die at any moment. So my question is, what's your sermon? Some of you gals, you think, well, I'm not going to preach. Yeah, but you can speak the gospel to somebody very clearly, very forcefully, very quickly. We all have to have a gospel presentation that's 30 seconds, 10 minutes, and 30 years. The lifetime gospel ministry projects God puts in front of us. What's your 30-second gospel presentation? I mean, if we were to go around the room right now, what is it? Is the gospel spring-loaded enough in your mind where you can state to somebody how they can find hope and forgiveness by repenting and believing in Jesus Christ? Can you give it in words that they can understand within 30 seconds? Can you say it to somebody in a way that gives them an opportunity to ask a question and go from that step to another one? You think about this. Be ready to preach, pray, or die at any time. Prepare your testimony. This is part of all the preparation of how you're focused. Prepare your testimony, not your experience, but what Christ has done. One of the things that's always troubling is when you hear someone's testimony, it's just a resume of sin. Like, we all have a resume of sin. We could play bigger or better with sin. You ever done that? I was this, and, you know, my tattoos and scars, and I sold more drugs than you. And, you know, it's like, I understand that. There are tremendous Apostle Paul-type testimonies watching people just dramatically turn from sin. And then there's others who, you grew up in a largely sanitized environment where your point of contact with sin was looking in the mirror. You had to really work hard to find opportunities to let that out because it was all inside of you, compressed by a Christian environment, and it was screaming to get out until you repent. So you think about this. What's the testimony that you're going to tell? Well, it's the gospel, but it's gospel spoken through the things that you've seen Christ do in your life. Who were you? What are you now? And how's it proven? That's all your testimony is who were you? What are you now? What'd you come to understand? And how's it proven out in your life day by day? Prepare. Why do you need to be prepared? Because you just don't know what's going to happen. Again, another missions trip, we were there, and I suddenly found out that I was going to be teaching every day on the book of James. It's like, I didn't know that going into this, but I got like 2 minutes to prepare, and I know what I'm doing tonight to get ready for tomorrow, and the next day, because we're marching through James, and that's what you're doing. You know, why? Well, you be flexible. You train. You ready your mind. You get ready. Any point in time. So take advantage of every opportunity. Use your time wisely. Don't do personal things. You might get some downtime. Guess what you do with downtime? you serve and you prepare for the next dime. So often it's the tendency to say, okay, I'm going to sit back. I'm going to, maybe if I can jump online, I'm going to update my social world, and I'm going to communicate with people, and I'm going to have this time just to kind of clear my mind. You don't have that opportunity. You're on a team to work the entire time. The time to debrief and sort through all the issues is later. This is the time for you to pour into others, to fellowship with people, to pray with people, to encourage, to make sure the rest of your team is sleeping and fed and cared for, that their gear is prepared for the next day. It's your time to reset and make sure everyone else is ready to go. Remain focused on the purpose of your trip, constantly repeating back to yourself, we're here to proclaim Christ, we're here to glorify Christ in any and every way. Maybe something else just to put in this on the focus. A short-term ministries team is not the opportunity for you to exercise your Christian liberty. There are things that you might very well enjoy and have great freedom to do here in America. That you do that in another country, you're going to blow up somebody's mission field because of the way we talk or the way we act or the things you might do, the music you might feel free to listen to here, but you don't realize the implications that has on someone else's culture. If you're not sensitive to those things, you're not aware of that, it's dangerous. That can trickle into things like the way you dress, the vocabulary you use, the type of activities you engage in, all kinds of things you could fill in there. That's where you take your cues from the missionary that you're interacting with. You say, what's appropriate? Define appropriate and prudent in your culture. And that's going to look totally differently in one area of the world from another. Last is this, pray relentlessly. Pray relentlessly. The work of evangelism is really advanced on our knees. I love 1 Thessalonians 5:17. Anyone know that off the top of their head? Yeah. Pray continually. I go the three word, pray without ceasing. So, different translation. But pray continually. You got two words there. You even shorter. Pray without ceasing. What are we praying for? Three things. God, draw them to salvation. Yeah, our prayer now is, God, there are unsaved people out there I haven't met yet. Yeah, I was conscious of that all through seminary. God, there are people who are currently engaged in sin that one day you're going to send us to shepherd them. They're engaged in lives right now making terminal decisions in many cases. Give us the grace to deal with them, but work right now in their hearts to prevent them from going down those pathways. Now, your prayer right now is, God, at some point, give me an opportunity to be on a missions trip. But work in the people's hearts. So that way when you see them, you make eye contact with them, you know, hey, I've been praying for you for years. I've been praying for you for years. I don't know your name, and I've never seen you, and this might be our only point of contact, but you've been on my heart for years, that God would give us an opportunity to proclaim the gospel to you, and we're here. If you're not praying for those people now, you're undercutting the very intention of what the trip is about. Paul said, Romans 10:1, brethren, my heart's desire, my prayer to God for them is for their salvation. That we pray for them. Pray that God would draw them to salvation. Pray that God would reveal opportunities, that he'll give you that opportunity. I love Paul's prayer in Colossians 4:3. You want to write this down, Colossians 4:3. He says, pray for us too, that God will open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ. Pray that God would open a door for our message. What was on the other side of that door for Paul? He was praying for an open door. Like, I pray for an open door, that somebody is open to the gospel. But when Paul prayed for an open door, literally, what was on the other side of that door? Suffering. I mean, he gives a whole list, right? Shipwrecked, beaten, times without number, left for dead, ultimately had his head cut off. I mean, he's praying for an open door without even considering what's on the other side of that door. Not that he hadn't already received a portion of that, he had. How many times do we pray for an open door that goes to the path of least resistance? We want evangelism of least resistance. We want the gospel opportunities of least resistance. And we kind of bump along in evangelism along these paths of least resistance. Which ones are easiest and most accessible to us? Pray that God would open a door, and at the same time, pray for boldness to walk through it. You know what it's like to be afraid? And I don't mean like boo and you're scared. I mean like you're paralyzed for fear. I remember as a young man, I was working at a church in Montana, and I was with a guy who, I mean, like his definition of evangelism was knocking on doors. And like that just scared the daylights out of me. You know, I was a Southern California kid going to Montana to serve in a church. And so we're going up to these homes, and you just have no idea. And like one door would open up, and there's a Mackenzie Timberwolf standing there. It's like, that's a pet in Montana. That's not a pet in Southern California. Like, that's what they have there. yeah, I'm just scared. I can't even talk. I got like lockjaw. I can't even say a word. And seeing this guy who just said, all right, son, you stand there silent and stonewall because that's all you have potential to do right now. But listen to how we do this. And to watch this man just patiently and lovingly introduce Christ to people who weren't looking for Christ, but just to see him winsomely open a conversation with them and see where God would take that. And when you're praying, and it took years to figure out that, look, if I love Christ, he's going to give me boldness to open my mouth to proclaim him. Even Paul, Ephesians 6:19 says, pray on my behalf that utterances will be given to me in the opening of my mouth, and to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains. Then proclaiming it, I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. It's Paul. It's like, this is Paul. And he's saying, I need boldness. If Paul needs boldness, there's no hope for me. We think of him in terms of spiritual giant. But he's just a man. And he needed boldness just like all the rest of us do. He says, pray for him. Pray for him. Those are some things to stick in mind. We want to have a lasting impact in a missions trip. It's going to come from a heart that's humble, a heart that's sacrificially serving, a heart that's loving without end, a heart that's ready to serve, that's completely focused on the goal, and a heart that's constantly praying. There's probably a lot more we can add to that, and this is a time I want to make sure you have plenty of opportunity to add to this, or if there's a question that's on your mind particularly. But as you're thinking about this, one thing I want to add for your heart to know is that as you look at this, you've got to set a goal in mind to engage this. It's one thing to train and never deploy. It's another thing to train with anticipation of deploying and to get in a place to start to participate in some aspect of ministry. Whether that's in your own church, I don't know what role you all might play in your church, but there are opportunities that you can initiate things. Start something. Start an outreach opportunity that you draw people with so you train so you can go and be more effective in other parts of the world. There are just incredible opportunities that this world has if you just want to try. If you think of any questions you have, but I'll give you an illustration to think of. In Southern California, we had tremendous, obviously 18 million people gathered together in one area. You've got a mix of cultures. One of the largest Thai Buddhist temples was just about 3/4 mile down the street from where our church building was located. An incredible range of cultures. But there was a hospital down the street that just did not have any relationship with churches. They had been burned too many times. Typical deal. Someone comes in, I'm God's gift to your hospital, let me be chaplain, and then they start something, it's like a flare, it's really big for a month, and then it just dies out. People aren't faithful, not committed. They do clumsy execution on what they're saying they're going to do, and things just evaporates. It ends up scarring it creates scar tissue in the unbeliever's mind. They're not receptive anymore. So we're trying to think, how can we get into this opportunity? How can we start a missions endeavor to this place, an evangelistic endeavor to this place, that can be a training ground for doing medical missions internationally? So we thought, well, what's the worst possible place to go to? It's the psych ward. It's the drunk tank. Can we be chaplain in the drunk tank? Can we be chaplain in the psych ward? And they said, sure, if you want to. You go into this place, and I don't know if any of you have been in a psych ward. One of my dearest friends, a guy who I just absolutely love and minister, was saved out of an experience in the psych ward from having been placed there. God does incredible things with all of us. But you go in this environment where it's people who, you're not even left with shoestrings. It's just robes. It's graffiti all over the walls. It stinks. It's just nasty. But you watch day after day, week after week, of just doing ministry there, praying for people, gathering together, talking to them about Christ, presenting the gospel, and watch day by day as soon the graffiti on the wall starts to change from the curse words to Jesus is Lord. As soon you start to see them start to think about Christ and understand his saving work and what he does. Just an amazing opportunity to see a transformation in someone's life. And then to watch the administration of the hospital say, okay, you're legit. You're serious about the gospel. You're serious about doing gospel ministry. You have access to the whole hospital. And you get to watch after month, and now years later, it's still going on as God has just worked amazingly there. See, that's the kind of thing you can start right now. Go be a chaplain in a hospital. Guys or gals could do that kind of role. Go be a chaplain. You'll help out in a local setting somewhere where you start to build the tenacity, build the understanding of how to interact with strangers, how to build trust, and go into a context that you are scared to death with, but open up a gospel opportunity. And then take that internationally and go and lead others and help build their courage too.